Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, October 12th, 2023. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. The headline from today's paper is Governors Reynolds, Pillen, and Noem tout records at 18th Tri-State Governors Conference in Sioux City. Dateline Sioux City. Wednesday, the governors of Iowa, Nebraska, and South Dakota were in Sioux City to talk about their respective records and hear from local business leaders about what Siouxland needs most. Kim Reynolds, Jim Pillen, and Christy Noem spoke and took questions at the Hilton Garden Inn on the banks of the Missouri River during the 18th Tri-State Governors Conference, a biennial meeting meant to bolster interstate commerce and cooperation between the states. This is a great opportunity to bring everyone together for our common interests, said Christy Van Mullen McManamy, the past chair of the Siouxland Chamber of Commerce, which put on the event. Iowa. Reynolds was the first of the three governors to step to the microphone in the sold-out Hilton Conference Room. During her time at the podium, Iowa's two-term executive touted the state's $1.83 billion surplus at the end of fiscal year 2023 and noted her administration's work to lower the corporate tax rate to 5.5% and touched on recent efforts to slash 43% of the state of Iowa's boards and commissions. Our national profile is rising, Reynolds said of Iowa. Our economy and fiscal health is strong. Two ongoing efforts Reynolds framed as spurring Iowa's economy are the state's reduction of unemployment benefits from 26 to 16 weeks, which became law in June of 2022, and the work that's been done to add and promote apprenticeships across Iowa. On the former, Reynolds said, the average right now that we're seeing with people on unemployment, we're getting them trained and back in the workforce in 9 weeks. Throughout her time, Reynolds promised there would be more economic and political change coming during the next session of the Iowa legislature. More tax cuts, more driving out waste in government, and more work on schools, including what she called the ability for public schools to increase teacher salaries. This teeny tiny state in the heartland of America is no longer a flyover, Reynolds said as she wound down. Nebraska. When Pillen spoke to the crowd about what he's focused on during his first year as governor, he repeated four words: kids, taxes, agriculture, values. My dream as governor of Nebraska is that we lift every kid up, that nobody falls through the cracks, and not one, Pillen said. We lift all these kids up and help them get their skill set for their training. To that end, Pillen suggested to the business leaders who were gathered at the Hilton that they should make connections with kids in 7th and 8th grade and hire them coming right out of high school. Pillen went on to tell those in attendance that they shouldn't be afraid to defend their faith and their family. We have to be activated as conservatives. If you believe in conservative leadership, we all have to do more. We can't say that's somebody else's issue. The issue Pillen chose to close on was the southern U.S. border with Mexico. Pillen, who visited southern Texas in August, has sent state troopers to the border twice in 2023, said Nebraska. Constituents would be asking him to send even more troopers and Army National Guard soldiers if they saw the conditions he's seen. Reynolds, too, touched on the border, saying, protecting citizens at home starts with protecting our southern border. South Dakota. Like Reynolds, Noem boasted about her state's lack of debt and the absence of an income tax and personal property tax in South Dakota. People, when given the personal responsibility to decide how to spend their dollars, they spend it best. They spend it better than the government ever would, Noem said. Incomes are going up in our state faster than they ever have before. We're growing at 5 to 10 times the national average right now, and we're going through some growing pains because of that. To try and ease some of those growing pains, Noem said the state's ratcheted up its marketing, which includes the Freedom Works Here ad campaign. She said a part of the ad push is about making the case that there's a mental and spiritual benefit to working a job. How incredibly important it is that you have something you go to every single day that contributes to society so you can live a life of significance. I think that's something our entire country needs to hear right now. Noam later said the entire United States also needs to come together to support what she called its greatest ally, Israel. What is happening there, the horrific actions that are being taken, the terrorist organizations that are going after our greatest ally, it is something that we will need to stand steadfastly and firmly with our ally for a period of time until we cut the head off the snake. The war between Israel and Hamas, the militant and political organization that governs the Gaza Strip and the Palestinian territories, has claimed more than 2,200 lives on both sides in less than a week of fighting, according to the Associated Press. The Israeli military said more than 1,200 people, including 155 soldiers, have died in Israel since Saturday's incursion. In Gaza, the health ministry says more than 1,050 have been killed and more than 5,100 injured. The United States Palestinian Refugee Agency says 250,000 people have been displaced in Gaza, the Associated Press reported. Tri-state presentations. Following the remarks from the three governors, local business and organizational leaders representing concerns about economic success, quality of life, child care, housing, mental health, wastewater, a pilot shortage, and the 185th Air Refueling Wing addressed Noam, Pillen, and Reynolds. One of the largest pitches in terms of cost came from Colonel Sonia Morrison, who commands the 185th Air Refueling Wing, which is located near the Sioux Gateway Airport. The 185th has said it needs a runway replacement, runways extensions, a ramp replacement, and a hangar replacement. In total, such work is projected to cost $185 million. Morrison said the 185th has operated for two decades with multiple Federal Aviation Administration waivers for its runway, ramp, and hangar. A packet for the 18th Tri-State Governors Conference included a statement to Congress from Reynolds, Pillen, and Noam, which read, in part, quote, "We join you in reminding the Department of Defense of their responsibility to fully fund the ramp, runway, and hangar investments promised to the 185th Air Refueling Wing over two decades ago," unquote. Morrison gave a similar remark, quote, "We are not asking for a handout. We are asking for the commitment that was verified many years ago," unquote. Once the presentations concluded, the three governors participated in a signing ceremony and gift-giving, then held a joint press conference and snapped photos with one another. Since the 17th Tri-State Governors Conference was held in South Sioux City, Nebraska, and Wednesday's took place in Sioux City, Iowa, the 2025 event will be located in South Dakota. The next story is titled, Unity Point Merger Falls Through. Clay Holderman, Unity Point President and CEO, steps aside. Dateline Sioux City. A proposed merger between Iowa's Unity Point Health, operator of Unity Point Health St. Luke's, and other clinics in Sioux City, and the New Mexico-based Presbyterian Healthcare Services has fallen through, Unity Point announced Wednesday. In March, Unity Point announced it had signed a letter of intent to explore the formation of a new healthcare organization with Presbyterian Healthcare. As a combined organization, the system would have employed around 40,000 people, including nearly 3,000 physicians and advanced practice clinicians, working alongside independent clinicians, educational partners, and colleges. The merged organization would have seen as much as $11 billion in operating revenue, according to projections from earlier this year. As a not-for-profit health system, we must pave a sustainable path forward to continue serving our communities with care and coverage. While we've done that successfully, independently, we know that partnering with like-minded health systems will allow us to accelerate our efforts, Dale Maxwell, President and Chief Executive Officer of Presbyterian Healthcare Services, said in a statement earlier this year when the letter of intent was signed. The statement from Unity Point did not indicate why exactly the deal collapsed. "We believe this decision allows us to better meet the needs of our patients, team members, communities, and key stakeholders," Sally Gray, Unity Point Board Chair, said in a statement, "As we move forward, Unity Point Health is focused on identifying new, innovative ways to deliver low-cost, high-quality care to those we serve." In another, apparently related turn of events, Unity Point's president and CEO, Clay Holderman, who had ties to Presbyterian, is departing. Holderman, previously executive vice president and chief operating officer at Presbyterian, began his tenure with Unity Point in early 2021. "Unity Point and Presbyterian are two organizations rooted in similar values," Holderman said in a statement earlier this year when the potential merger was announced. In its press release Wednesday, Unity Point said Holderman's departure came as a result of the unsuccessful merger, adding that he will explore other professional opportunities and we wish him well. Attorney Scott Kaiser has been named Unity Point's new president and CEO. He was previously the organization's chief legal officer. "We're confident in Scott's leadership going forward, and we remain committed to showing our people, patients, and communities how much they matter," Gray said in a statement. West Des Moines-based Unity Point, the nation's fifth largest non-denominational health system and one of the state's largest medical providers, operates or has relationships with scores of clinics and hospitals in metropolitan and rural communities and home care services in Iowa, western Illinois, and southern Wisconsin. This is the second time in 4 years that Unity Point has announced the exploration of a merger and then called it off. In 2019, Unity Point signed a letter of intent to merge brands with the Sioux Falls-based Sanford Health. That transaction fell through later that year. Kelby Krabenhoft, Sanford Health's then-president and CEO, said at the time that, quote, "the Unity Point Health Board failed to embrace the vision," unquote. Next story is Sioux City Council candidates Schoenherr and Murphy moving on to general election, by Dolly Butts. Dateline Sioux City. Sioux City voters on Tuesday reduced the field of candidates for a lone seat on the city council from 3 to 2, with the results of the primary election pushing incumbent Julie Schoenherr and challenger Tom Murphy onto the November 7th general election ballot. Unofficial election results from the Woodbury County Auditor's Office showed Schoenherr got 42%, while Murphy received 31% of the vote. Challenger Tricia Frederick, vice president of mortgage lending at Guaranteed Rate, received 26% of the vote. "I'm very, very happy that I made the next round, and I would like to thank everybody that voted for me and all the people that supported my campaign," Murphy said in a phone call Tuesday night. Schoenherr said in a statement provided to the Journal Tuesday night that she's confident she can build a better tomorrow for Sioux City with voters' continued support. "I want to express my appreciation for the incredible support that I have received. I am truly humbled by the overwhelming show of encouragement and trust that you have shown me. It is not easy to come out on a weeknight, especially when there is only one item on the ballot," she wrote. "Yet, here you are, standing with me and showing your unwavering support. As we move forward towards the November elections, I want you all to know that your support means the world to me. With your help and dedication, we can achieve great things for Sioux City. Together, as a united community, we have the power to make a significant difference." There are 26,234 people registered to vote in Sioux City. With 2,390 votes cast, turnout was just 7.83%. "It was a pretty light turnout. I'm kind of disappointed, but that's the way it goes," Auditor Pat Gill said Tuesday night at the Woodbury County Courthouse. "I sent a letter to every active registered voter, told them where the election was and different methods to cast your ballot. Apparently, it just didn't generate a lot of interest." Anytime there are three or more candidates, a primary election for the Sioux City Council is required. Schoenherr, a Sioux City businesswoman who previously owned and operated Soho American Kitchen and Bar on 4th Street, was elected to her first four-year term in 2019 after she edged incumbent Rhonda Capron by 361 votes. Schoenherr told the Journal last month that she is seeking a second term because she feels a commitment to serve the community. I have witnessed firsthand the kind of impact a new, thoughtful person can add to the council and what differences they can make to the city, she said. I have a lot of projects started and a lot of conversations that are open that are leading to projects, and I really want to keep those projects going in a forward motion. I don't want them to die out. Murphy, a lifelong Sioux Citian, has a background in construction. He worked for the Sioux City Assessor's Office as a residential and commercial appraiser for 9 years before joining the Sioux City Inspection Services as a residential and commercial building inspector. Murphy, who was promoted to chief building inspector, retired after serving the city for 32 years. My goal, if I'm elected, is to ensure Sioux City is a safe place to live and raise families. I enjoy listening to what people have to say, and I am very approachable, he said in a statement provided to the Journal last month. It is essential that the city of Sioux City promote economic growth, public safety, infrastructure, and tax relief. I definitely have a common-sense approach and have been well-respected by my peers. The next story is LEC Authority Approves Added Fees by Caitlin Yamada. Dateline Sioux City. The delay of the construction of the new Woodbury County Law Enforcement Center will cost the county an additional $34,000 a month for the continued services of the jail consultant, Baker Group. The project was set to be completed on September 14th, but it was discovered that 37 fire dampers were missing, pushing the project completion date to a proposed April 9th, 2024. An original delay cost estimate of $1.8 million was publicly stated, but the specific breakdown of that cost is unknown. The Baker Group is the Law Enforcement Center Authority's owner representative, and their contract was set to expire October 1st. So far, the LEC Authority has paid $1.46 million to Baker Group for their services. On Tuesday, the authority approved the contract extension for $34,000 a month until the project is complete. The original contract was amended to have the Baker Group fee set at $1.325 million until April 1st as a cost-saving measure. It was then amended again to increase that sum by $138,000 to cover the additional time frame of April 1st through October 1st. Part of the continued contract sum is for the employment of an on-site Baker Group project manager who oversees the day-to-day work and keeps the LEC authority up to date, said Shane Albrecht, a Baker Group consultant for the project. The on-site manager is Todd Week, the LEC authority chair, Ron Week's son. Citizens who attended the meeting expressed disapproval of the contract extension and the continued employment of Todd Week. Ernie Colt, a business representative for North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters, asked what experience Todd Week has overseeing a project of this size. Week was previously employed by the Woodbury County Sheriff's Department as a correctional officer and deputy sheriff for 30 years. He was also a self-employed contractor from January 2021 to September 2021, prior to his employment with the Baker Group, according to a public resume. $70 million project and the son of the chairman hired to oversee the project, said Doyle Turner of Mobile. Is there another person in your company that can't do this? Authority member Mark Nelson said a new owner's representative would have an abundance of catching up to do if they started now, at the 11th hour. Ron Week said he understands people's concerns, but he said the public does not truly know the ins and outs of the project. You do not understand what it takes to make this work, he said. He added the support he receives from Albrecht is phenomenal. Week said someone new would not have all of the knowledge and insight of the project that the Baker Group does. Supervisor Dan Bittinger said he is concerned about the $34,000 a month fee and asked for a breakdown of where that money is being used. He suggested decreasing the monthly fee to $1 a month, given the $1.49 million that the public has already paid. In my opinion, that would show goodwill, he said. Nelson asked if it was possible to decrease the $34,000 figure. Weak said the Baker Group management would have to answer that question, but added the additional fee would be part of any future claim against the people who caused the extension. When the contract was extended in April at $138,000 for 6 months, Albrecht said Baker Group charged the bare minimum of what was needed to create and operate for that timeline. He said at that time there was no one particular company at fault for the delay, therefore no one to seek reimbursements from. In an overall project update, Albrecht said the authority is discussing the project schedule with the general contractor, Hausmann Construction, and the project architect, Goldberg Group Architects, according to a news release. No updated project timeline was given. The release also stated that the authority is working with its attorney to assess additional costs and damages on the project and are taking the proper steps to ultimately hold the responsible parties liable for such additional costs and damages. Sioux City man formerly charged with murder for shooting death. By Nick Hytrek, Dateline Sioux City. A Sioux City man suspected of fatally shooting another man has been formally charged with murder. Woodbury County Attorney James Loomis on Monday filed a trial information charging Mario Corona Ruiz with first-degree murder. His arraignment was scheduled for October 18th in Woodbury County District Court. Corona Ruiz is being held in the Woodbury County Jail in lieu of a $1 million bond. Corona Ruiz, 21, is charged with shooting 34-year-old Michael Schwiebach of Sioux City in the early morning hours of September 21st near West 19th and Center Streets. According to a complaint filed in the case, Corona Ruiz was driving an SUV through an alley near West 20th Street towards Center Street at about 5 a.m. As he stopped at the intersection of the alley and Center Street, Schwiebach was walking in the 1900 block of Center Street, crossed the street, and continued walking near the alley. He had walked toward the SUV and had some conversation with Corona Ruiz, who then fired one shot out of the driver's side window and struck Schwiebach in the right side of his chest before driving away. Two witnesses heard the shot, saw Schwiebach on the ground, and called 911. Officers responded to the call at 5:13 a.m., found Schwiebach, and administered first aid until an ambulance arrived. Schwiebach was transported to Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center, where he was pronounced dead an hour later. Corona Ruiz was located and arrested the next day in South Sioux City. The trial information document contained no other details of the incident, instead referring to Iowa code that Corona Ruiz, with malice aforethought, willfully, deliberately, and with premeditation, killed Schwiebach. If Corona Ruiz were to be found guilty of first-degree murder, he'd face a mandatory sentence of life in prison without parole. Man sentenced for sexual abuse of minor. Dateline Omaha. A Sioux City man has been sentenced to federal prison for having sexual contact with a minor. Francisco Zapata Jr., 22, had pleaded guilty in U.S. District Court in Omaha to one count of sexual abuse of a minor. He was sentenced Wednesday to 30 months in prison. He must also serve 5 years of supervised release after completing his prison sentence. There is no parole in the federal system. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, an FBI investigation identified a minor victim who disclosed meeting Zapata through social media in the spring of 2021 and having sexual contact with Zapata on the Winnebago Indian Reservation. At the time of the sexual contact, the minor was 14 years old and Zapata was 20. When the FBI interviewed Zapata, he admitted having sexual contact with a minor. A charge of abusive sexual contact was dismissed. Hosper's man pleads not guilty of sexual contact. Dateline, Orange City, Iowa. A Hosper's, Iowa man has pleaded not guilty of having sexual contact with a minor female. Andrew Jocelyn, 35, entered his written plea Monday in Sioux County District Court to one count of sexual exploitation of a minor and two counts each of third-degree sexual abuse and lascivious contact with a minor. The Sioux County Sheriff's Office began an investigation after receiving a report Jocelyn had solicited the girl for inappropriate sexual contact. Investigators determined Jocelyn had had sexual contact with the girl, who is under age 16, at a home in Hospers. According to a complaint filed in Sioux County District Court, Jocelyn admitted to investigators he had sexual contact with the girl on multiple occasions from October 2021 through March 1st of 2022. Jocelyn was arrested September 5th. Navigator Pipeline Halted Again, by Brendan Moore, Dateline, Omaha. For the second time this year, an Omaha-based energy company has hit the pause button on plans to construct a 1,350-mile carbon capture and sequestration pipeline that would cut through Iowa, Nebraska, and South Dakota. Navigator CO2 Ventures, a midstream infrastructure company that has proposed the $3.4 billion pipeline that would cross through Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, and South Dakota, filed a motion Tuesday with the Illinois Commerce Commission seeking to withdraw its application for approval of the proposed 292-mile Illinois portion of the pipeline. In its filing with the ICC, the company said it has elected to reassess the route and other aspects of the project, but that it intends to reinitiate Illinois permitting, if appropriate, after a full evaluation is complete. A statement provided by the company largely mirrored the reasoning given in the withdrawal application. The company noted that withdrawal request is consistent with our recent filings in neighboring jurisdictions. Last month, Navigator was denied a construction permit by regulators in South Dakota, and last week, the company filed a similar request with the Iowa Utilities Board to pause its permit application in that state amid its reassessment. Navigator submitted its initial application in July 2022, but withdrew and later filed a revised application earlier this year. A decision from the ICC would have been due by the end of February 2024. While welcomed by some as a crucial piece of an all-of-the-above approach to reducing point-source greenhouse gas emissions, carbon capture has generally been greeted with skepticism to downright opposition from environmental groups who believe it is a costly, inefficient technology that gives polluters a license to keep burning fossil fuels instead of transitioning to clean energy. But Illinois' favorable geology and federal incentives encouraging industry to invest in the still relatively new technology have made the state a focal point for potential projects. Navigator's proposal has run into roadblocks across the entire proposed route due to safety and environmental concerns and significant opposition from landowners whose properties the pipeline would cut across. In June, ICC staff member Mark Maple recommended that the commission deny Navigator's application, calling it inconsistent with the legislative purpose of the state law governing CO2 pipelines. He also said that Navigator's application was not properly filed and that the project was not a benefit to the citizens of Illinois nor in the public interest, as the company had not yet received the necessary permits or secured a sequestration site. Illinois is a primary target for polluting companies to dump their carbon dioxide waste underground, and we are unprepared to face the dangers associated with transporting and burying this pollution underneath our farms and aquifers, said Coalition co-founder Pam Reichert. Navigator's motion to withdraw its petition delays the regulatory process, but doesn't diminish the urgency for Illinois lawmakers and Governor Pritzker to enact state legislation at every step of the CCS industrial cycle, at the capture facility, through pipelines, and at the sequestration site. The most recent proposal called for carrying carbon dioxide emissions converted from gas into a dense fluid phase from 21 ethanol and fertilizer facilities in 5 Midwestern states to underground sequestration sites in Christian and Montgomery counties. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, October 12, 2023, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Next, we'll turn to today's obituary. Janet H. Manning, Lamars, Iowa. Janet H. Manning, 91, of Lamars, passed away on Sunday, October 8, 2023, at the Holy Spirit Retirement Home in Sioux City. Massive Christian burial will take place at 11 a.m. on Friday, October 13, 2023, at All Saints Catholic Parish, St. James Church in Lamars. Father Doug Klein will celebrate Mass. Burial will follow at Calvary Cemetery in Lamars. Visitation will begin at 2 p.m. on Thursday, October 12, 2023, at the Maurer Johnson Funeral Home in Lamars. The family will be present from 5 to 8 p.m. with the Catholic Daughter's Rosary at 5:30 p.m. and a scriptural prayer service at 7 p.m. There will also be 1 hour of visitation at the church prior to Mass on Friday. Expressions of sympathy may be directed through maurerjohnsonfh.com. Doris K. O'Brien, Sioux City. Doris K. O'Brien, 92, of Sioux City, passed away peacefully on October 6, 2023, after a relatively short illness. Her life will be remembered on Thursday, October 12, at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Family will be present from 4 to 7:30 p.m. with a prayer service at 6:30. Her welcome into heaven will be celebrated at 10:30 a.m. Friday, October 13th, at St. Michael Catholic Church. Online condolences may be directed to meyerbrotherschapels.com. Gregory Greg Paul Bronger, Sioux City. Gregory Paul Bronger, 57, of Sioux City, passed away unexpectedly. Celebration of life will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. Thursday, October 12th, at Pearls, 417 Pearl Street. Private burial will be held at Calvary Cemetery. Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel is assisting with arrangements. Richard Wachter, Bloomfield, Nebraska. Richard Wachter, 91, of Bloomfield, Nebraska, died Saturday, October 7, 2023, at his residence, surrounded by his family. Funeral services were held at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, October 11, 2023, at Tabor Lutheran Church in Wausau, Nebraska. Richard Bloomquist, PMA, officiated. Private family burial will be in Bloomfield City Cemetery in Bloomfield at a later date. Military honors were provided by the United States Army Honor Guard. Visitation was held 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at the Tabor Lutheran Church Fellowship Hall in Wausau. Brockhaus Funeral Home in Bloomfield is in charge of arrangements. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Tabor Lutheran Church Steeple Fund. Thelma L. Muller, Hornick, Iowa. Thelma L. Muller, 95, of Hornick, passed away Sunday, October 8, 2023, at Burgess Health Center, Onawa, Iowa, surrounded by her family. Private family services will be held at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Gosler Funeral Home and Monuments, Onawa, Iowa. Condolences may be left online for the family at goslerfuneralhome.com. Alan Lee Anderson, Cherokee, Iowa. Alan Lee Anderson, 61, of Cherokee, Iowa, formerly of Sioux City, passed away on Monday, October 9, 2023, at the Sioux City Hospital. Funeral services will be at 2 p.m. Monday, October 16, 2023, at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel, 3220 Stone Park Boulevard in Sioux City. The family will greet friends 1 hour prior to the service on Monday. Randy Ray Ogle, Sioux City. Randy Ray Ogle, 67, of Sioux City, passed away on Monday, October 9, 2023, at a local hospital, comforted by family. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. Friday, October 13, 2023, at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. A private family interment will be held at a later date. Visitation with the family present will begin at 11 a.m. Friday morning at the funeral home. Online condolences may be offered to the family at Meyer Brothers Chapels. Now turning to the sports page and girls volleyball. The headline from the sports page is Hawks Bunkers, an All-Around Threat by Ryan Timmerman. Dateline, Remsen, Iowa. Things are a little different around the Bunkers household these days. Now the oldest sibling around, Maya Bunkers, has assumed the role of tone setter for her younger brother and sister now that the eldest of the clan, Jackson, is off to college. Since Jackson, the oldest of the four Bunkers kids, you can tell it's simmered down in the house a little bit, said Maya Bunkers, the Journal's athlete of the week. When he was here, everything was a competition. It was always, what's your batting average, or how many points did you score? It's always been competitive between us, and that's pushed all of us. My younger siblings now are like, I'm going to be a better athlete than you. Hallie, a freshman at RSM, comes up in softball and tells me how she's already taken my spot at shortstop in softball. It's always back and forth. With older brother Jackson now at Northeast Iowa Community College for baseball after a highly accomplished prep career, younger siblings Hallie and Jay-Z now fall under Maya's command. And Maya's outlook suits her mother, Stacy, just fine, as Stacy is also Remsen St. Mary's volleyball coach. We are not a team that looks at stats, Stacy Bunker said. There are so many teams, coaches, players, parents that look at stats, and I'm the exact opposite. I tell them all the time not to worry about their stats. What matters is what they do as a team, and anything they do individually is because of the team. They make each other who they are. But even if it's a little less competitive around home, Bunkers' on-court production has only kept increasing. If Bunkers were to sneak a peek at the Class 1A 10th-ranked Hawks stats this season, she'd see she's among the team leaders in virtually every meaningful category. On Wednesday, Bunkers leads the team in assists with 258 digs, aces, 40, and serve success, 96.1%. She did have the lead until the 17-8 Hawks played George Little Rock on Tuesday night, and classmate Claire Schroeder went for a dozen kills to overtake Bunkers for the team lead, as Schroeder now has 146 kills, three ahead of Bunkers. We've had some players out for various reasons, Stacy Bunker said. A lot of teams have had the same girls on the court all season long. That's an advantage for them. But just recently, we've hit our groove there because that has such an effect on chemistry. But they're full of personalities and great attitudes. For her career, Bunkers has amassed 809 assists, 417 kills, 348 digs, and 110 aces, with a serve success percentage in the mid-90s. We've always had her as a setter since I've been coaching, Stacy Bunker said. That's been her main role, but she comes up and hits from the front row, and she's been a great, consistent server. She's a great digger and passer. We have a few players who can play all around the court, which is great. I like setting because when one of my teammates gets a kill, it makes me feel good that I helped and set them up for it, she said. While Remsen St. Mary's hasn't produced a state qualifier since 1984, the current group may have as good a shot of ending the season in Iowa City as any team during that span. After producing single-digit win totals for a majority of the season since, Remsen St. Mary's has taken off in recent years. Since back-to-back 6-20 seasons in 2017 and 18, RSM got back into double figures for the first time since 2016 during the 2019 campaign with a 10-18 record. Then Coach Bunkers, Maya, and her classmates arrived to supplement a group of upperclassmen ready to win, and the team went 13-13 in 2020, 16-11 the following season, and 20-7 last season with the class of 24 assuming larger and larger roles along the way. Bunkers has had help from both parents along the way as her father, Jeremy, has been involved in coaching her in basketball and softball. They're super involved, she said. The only sport I don't get coached by a parent in is track. It's nice, though, because they can give constructive criticism, which I need, and critique me in a way that's easier to take from them. They can be pretty critical sometimes, but that helps me as an athlete. It's been one step at a time, but the Hawks hope that process will continue this season in a big way after the teams of recent past have gone from losing in the first round of the Class 1A regional playoffs to the regional quarterfinal to the regional semifinal last season. And the team has done so in an increasingly unique way as it, like other RSM athletics, relies on multiple sport athletes like Bunkers to fill out rosters. "I think it's better that way," Bunkers said. "We take it one sport at a time and focus on that team. We form stronger bonds that way instead of doing high school sports and club sports at one time. We're always looking forward to the next season, too. When softball comes around, we're so excited about it because we haven't played it in a year. That leaves little time for the members of the team to play club sports, but that's fine by them. They just as soon bounce from one sport to the next with each other and give whatever the in-season sport is their full attention rather than be pulled in different directions for different spots with different coaches and different teammates. I don't have one girl that plays volleyball outside of our high school," Stacy Bunker said. "There are disadvantages to it. We don't have time much for a preseason. We don't get into the gym early like most teams because they're in softball all summer. But we're very fortunate that they're very athletic girls and they perform to the best of their ability. We have so many seniors on the team. 10 of the 16 players on the roster are seniors. You'd think leadership would be a top priority, but it's really not. They all listen to each other and have a way of leading in a soft way. They all have leadership qualities, but one doesn't rule over the others. Nobody wants to be the boss. They want to do it as a team." That's emblematic of Bunkers' ascension into one of Remsen St. Mary's top multi-sport athletes. In basketball, Bunkers and the Hawks have reached the state semifinals last winter. On the hardwood, she has over 850 career points, a number that's increased over the seasons from 262 in 2020-21 to 218, and then 315. Nearly 300 rebounds, over 250 assists, and 142 steals. She won the 1A shuttle hurdle relay at the state track and field meet in 2022, finishing the race in 1 minute 7.96 seconds, along with Schroeder, Hallie Gales, and Whitney Jensen. "Once we experience some winning in one thing, we don't expect anything less," Bunkers said. "We didn't really expect to go to state in basketball, but we did it. That was our first time going in basketball, and it was a great experience. Now we want that feeling in volleyball. We moved one step at a time with the end goal of getting to state." Bunkers is also a star shortstop in softball. A three-time All-Stater in 1A, Bunkers was named to the third-team All-State as a freshman, second team as a sophomore, and first team this past summer, as she's been a part of three state qualifiers on the diamond, where her career numbers include 137 hits, 95 RBIs, and 86 stolen bases on 91 attempts. In fact, softball is a sport she has her eye on in regards to playing at the next level. She's garnered interest from colleges across several levels and is in the process of narrowing it down. But for now, her focus, as it's been all along, is on the Hawks volleyball team. "Whatever sport they're playing the next day is what has our attention," said Bunkers. Get to know RSM's Maya Bunkers. Her favorite genre of music, country. Her favorite movie, The Lorax. Her favorite meal, chicken Alfredo. And pregame rituals, eating ramen noodles before games. Next, we have 10 high school football games to watch by Ryan Timmerman and Jesse Brothers. Here is a look at the top week 8 high school games around Siouxland. Bridgewater Emery Ethan, 5-2 at Elk Point Jefferson, 6-1. BEE's top players, Drake Gustafson, a senior, Macklin Weber, a junior, Tate Klum, a senior, Jason Zeeb, a junior, and Keen Stevenson, junior. EPJ's top players, Jake Gale, senior, Keaton Gale, junior, Ashton Fairbanks, junior, Grayson Gerard, junior. Game notes. EPJ, the defending Class B champs, have the one loss to Sioux Valley, but otherwise haven't had a game within 10 points. Both of these teams should be safely in the playoffs, but this game could have big ramifications when it comes to being able to host playoff games. Coverage, Ryan Timmerman, at Ryan Timmerman 3 on Twitter /X. West Lyon, 7-0, at Central Lyon, George Little Rock, 7-0. West Lyon's top players are Bryson Childress, Jr., Tate Hoff, Jr., Carson Hoogveen, Jr., Matthias Knobloch, Sr., Carter Vermeer, also a senior. CLGLR's top players, Reese Vanderzee, Graham Eben, a senior, Isaiah Johnson, a senior. Game notes. Both teams are solidly locked into the postseason and may both get a chance to host games up until state, regardless of the outcome of this game, since both are ranked in the top five in Class 2A. However, the winner will win District 1 outright, which is plenty of a prize. Denison Shelswick, 5-2, at Lamar's, 6-1. Lamar's top players. Tegan Casel, senior. Jude Doherty, Jr., Giovanni Kabanga, Jr., Andrew Grant, sophomore, Bo Waddle, Sr., Jaden Nelson, Jr., and Evan Jalis, Sr. Denison Shelwig's top players, Luke Weavers, Sr., Blaine Brodsky, Sr., Jake Fink, Sr., Joel Murillo, Jr. Game notes. As it stands, Lamar's is in the Class 4A playoffs and is ranked 11th in the RPI. A district title would further solidify a playoff spot for the Bulldogs, but Lamar's would need this one in order to do that and assure a spot in the postseason. Sioux City East, 4-3, at Ames, 3-4. East top players, Cal Jepson, sophomore, Miles Weger, junior, J.J. Gosh, senior, Richard Stewart, Sr., Michael Williams, Sr., Keegan Augustine, Sr., Kaysen Claiborne, freshman. Ames's top players, Lane Kenny, Sr., Cameron Cantonwine, sophomore, and Jameson Poe, Jr. Game notes. With a 45-18 win over Des Moines Lincoln last week, East moved up from 19th in the Class 5A RPI to number 15, which puts the Black Raiders in the playoffs. However, East doesn't have much wiggle room, as only the top 16 get to the postseason. So, for all intents and purposes, the Black Raiders' playoffs started last week, if not before. Storm Lake, 3-4, at Spencer, 1-6. Storm Lake's top players, Carson Lohman, senior, Marco Cortez, freshman, Rylan Richardson, sophomore, Cameron Boyd, sophomore, David William, freshman, and Joey Rice, senior. Spencer's top players, Cale Bruning, junior, Adrian Carrillo, senior, Dalton Ikema, senior, and Brody Jordan, junior. Game notes. Storm Lake's season started off promising with a 3-2 start, but a two-game setback has left the Tornadoes desperate for wins over the final 2 weeks in order to get into the playoffs for the first time in Class 4A. Lawton Bronson, 2-5, at OABCIG, 5-2. Lawton Bronson's top players are Braden Heiss, a senior, Evan Teeger, a junior, Cown Jaminet, a junior. OABCIG's top players are Bryson Kohler, Jr., Kelton Ladwig, Sr., Jax DeJean, freshman. Game notes. OABCIG clinched the Class 1A District 1 with a 4-0 mark with a 12-6 squeaker over Hinton last week. Hinton and West Sioux tied for second with 3-1 marks and also have sewn up playoff spots heading into the final regular season game Friday. Lawton Bronson and Ridgeview are both 1-3 in the district. Because Lawton Bronson lost to Ridgeview earlier this season, the Eagles will need to win Friday and then hope Ridgeview falls at home to MVA OCOU 1-5. The Raptors hold the tiebreaker for the final postseason slot in the district by virtue of a 22-13 win over the Eagles 2 weeks ago. Cedar Catholic, 4-3, at Ponca, 3-4. Cedar Catholic's top players, Braden Riefenrath, junior, Brighton Whitmire, sophomore, and Ty Tone, senior. Ponca's top players are Dalton Lambrecht, senior, Austin Dendinger, junior, Tucker McGill, junior. And game notes. The Trojans and the Indians renew a long-standing rivalry, with both teams looking to land a spot in the Class C2 playoffs. Cedar enters the contest with 39.714 points in the wildcard standings for the 16 field, with Ponca two spots back with 38.42 points. The Indians conclude the regular season on October 13th at West Holt, while the Trojans finish at home versus top-ranked Norfolk Catholic, 7-0, in a rematch of last season's state championship game. Top-ranked Norfolk Catholic, looking for back-to-back titles, led the tough District 4 by a game over Battle Creek. Laurel conquered Coleridge, 3-4, at Tri-County Northeast, 4-3. Laurel conquered Coleridge's top players are Braden Erweiler, senior, Carter Coles, senior, and Connor Korth, junior. Tri-County Northeast top players are Michael Dickens, a senior, B. Jorgensen, a junior, and B. Isom, a junior. Game notes. In the regular season finale for both teams, Tri-County Northeast will look to secure a playoff spot for the first time since Emerson, Hubbard, and Allen combined into a single program. The Wolfpack enter Friday's game with 39.28 points, 26th in the Class D1 standings. The Bears, who are 36th with 37.28 points, also need a victory to have a chance to squeeze into the 32nd team postseason field. Coverage, Jesse Brothers, SCJ Visuals. Sioux City Central's top players. Sioux City Central, 3-4, at East Sac County, 3-4. Top players are Max Adams, senior, Owen Miller, sophomore, Max Adams, senior. East Sac's top players, Tate Lahr, senior, Charlie Veet, senior, and Carter Ludwig, senior. Game notes. With a win in the regular season finale, each team would clinch a spot in next week's Class 1A playoffs. Sioux City Central enters the contest with a 2-2 record in District 2, tied for third place with Pocahontas Area. East Sac is a game back at 1-3. The top four teams in each district advance to the playoffs. Emmitsburg and Manson Northwest Webster, which hold the top two spots, meet in Emmitsburg Friday night for the district title. And that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, October 12th, 2023. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate. A decade ago, there were typically 20 earthquakes a year that were large enough to feel in the central and eastern U.S. But in 2015, there were over 1,000 of them. Why? It's mostly because we're pumping more water into the ground. The boom in U.S. oil and gas production over the last decade has brought many more oil wells, which also produce water. Most is naturally occurring in the formation, and some was injected by operators to allow or improve the recovery of oil and gas. In both cases, the water will likely have picked up salt and other minerals from the rock, making it many times saltier than seawater. Operators may re-inject this water to continue to liberate oil and gas. But more often, there's too much to handle. So it's trucked or piped to disposal wells, where it's pumped down into deep saltwater reservoirs. Adding large volumes of wastewater increases the pressure in these rock formations, which can allow natural faults to slip more easily than they normally would, causing earthquakes. To address these quakes, regulators and the petroleum industry are monitoring disposal wells and shutting down those that could cause damaging seismic activity. And they now think that managing wastewater injection more carefully should help. There's still more work to be done, and university research centers, like the Bureau of Economic Geology, are conducting major studies with the aim of minimizing the risk of earthquakes while maintaining the benefits of domestic energy production. For EarthDate, I'm Scott Tinker.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.